You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher, and we are back from South by Southwest. Scott, where are you this week? Somewhere else.
I'm in the public library in Aspen.
Why?
We're out here. It's ski week for the kids, so I came out yesterday, and I'm going full house on the mountain. Everything is full house. I've decided that's my new term, full house.
All right. Okay. All right. But why the public library? Is that the only studio in Aspen? They don't have
Because when you
there?
Have kids, trying to find a quiet place is near impossible, and this is what we've been relegated to, is the public library. They couldn't be nicer here.
How is the public library?
In Aspen?
When's the last time you were in a public library? You know, just in general, when's the last time you were in a public library?
I like libraries a lot. I go to the library in Del Rey. I find the one in New York inspiring. I think libraries are sexy again. I think they're making a comeback.
Are they? I don't know. Like books. Did you see that picture of all those supermodels carrying books? Interesting.
Please forward it to me. Please forward it to my private text
Real
message
books.
Account.
It's from the New York Post. It's ridiculous. It's so insulting to both supermodels and books. Anyway, let's go through the stories this week. Obviously, there's more serious stories. There's a lot of huge stories. So we have a lot to break down. Obviously, the aftermath of the New Zealand terrorist attack that was streamed on Facebook is just one more horrific mess the company has to clean up. I had written last week in the New York Times about the worst week ever for Facebook, and this was the day before the New Zealand attacks. They and YouTube and others have tried mightily to clean it up, but it's still a giant mess, and I just love to know what you think about that. Obviously, social media played a role in this. I don't know if it was the key role, but it was definitely a major role.
So, Kara, Germany might be a model here, and that is because of the history around fascism in Europe, they've decided that they're more comfortable violating the tension of First Amendment to try and put out or if you will, arrest dangerous content before it goes viral, if you will. And as a result, because they've decided the social media platforms incur greater liability if something bad happens as a result of content on Facebook in Germany, there are a lot more editors and screeners in Germany. So the bottom line is when you make these companies responsible and liable for this stuff, they figure out a way to put more people screening this content. And then the kind of the very basic question is, if all the other media channels in the world have figured out a way to screen this content, specifically they pay people to put up the content and they screen it, why have we decided that these guys are exonerated from that? Should we have a default notion that they are allowed, because of the nature of these platforms, to not screen or not be responsible for the content that ends up on their platforms?
Yes, exactly. I think what's interesting is the question of that they have done a really good job blocking ISIS, for example. There was a great story in BuzzFeed about this. They've done a great job blocking ISIS. Why can't they just take white supremacy or other areas like that and just do the same thing, just to make a decision on certain kinds of content? And that'll, of course, you know, raise the hackles of free speech and that. And, you know, I've been getting attacked for saying some things like this, but I don't care. These platforms are not benefiting from this hate speech, and at some point they're going to have to make a choice. Unless they just want to be free-for-alls, and that's what they become. And so they could do it because they've done it with terrorist content or tried to really hard. And so that's a big question for them, whether they just want to say, look, we're just not going to be for white supremacy, which doesn't seem to me to be that hard. Or all those memes, we're not going to be a platform for it. And I think we'll see. I don't think they're going to do that, but they could. They certainly, there's examples like in Germany or with ISIS that they've done it relatively, you know, it's just a question whether they have the guts to do it or they have the whatever to do it.
Look at YouTube, Twitter, and mm-hmm. Facebook. In terms of the gestalt of management, who do you think is most serious about trying to address this problem? And
probably least YouTube. Probably YouTube, I would guess.
Most serious
I think they're the most concerned about it. I think they know they've got a problem. At least, you know, I do think Facebook is concerned about it, but I think they are. It's just, I think they don't know what to do. There's so many, every answer is a bad answer, essentially. Every solution has its own thorny hooks. And so, so that's a problem. I think they're ill-equipped to handle these massive disasters. And again, maybe the government will step in. I don't know. We'll see. There's been, you know, there's lots of talk about that. And it will be interesting what happens. I'd love to get an interview with the New Zealand prime minister who, like, in 2 seconds banned assault rifles. Like, what does she think of the way these platforms were used by this terrorist? And so it's a good question. I think it'll ultimately come down to regulation as it will. And speaking of regulation, the admissions scandal, it sounds like a weird thing from all these murders to this, but, you know, another really interesting scandal that happened in this age. And there were obviously more internet connections than you think because of videos by some of these kids and things like that. But it was really something. I'm doing my kids' college thing right now. So it sort of was fascinating to read about it and horrifying at the same time.
Yeah, there's so much here. You have, whenever typically you have this level of income inequality, you have these mechanisms for self-correction, and they're usually war, famine, or mm-hmm. revolution. And I think we're going through sort of almost like a soft revolution where we're now shaming wealthy people who are basically, Bob Dylan said that money doesn't talk, it curses. And basically this is an example of the wealthy cursing at the middle mm-hmm. class, because when Stanford only takes 4% of its applicants and every company within a 10-mile radius of Stanford has figured out a way to scale their product to millions and millions or billions of people, and yet Stanford has tripled the amount of applicants but hasn't increased their supply because they want to maintain the exclusivity. There, you know, we have a problem. And who's getting hurt here? It's interesting. If you're an impressive kid who's overcome the obstacles of being raised in a low-income household, we're bringing as many or more of those kids into the university system as ever before. Rich kids have no problem getting in. There's 38 universities, top universities, including 5 Ivies, that have more kids from the top 1% of mm-hmm. households, income-earning households, than the bottom 60%. The kids that are really getting squeezed here are probably the majority of the kids that we knew or grew up with, and that is kids who are good, but maybe not remarkable, don't have a patent, from middle-class households. So those are the ones that don't have the seats. And while they're still going to college, what you're seeing across the board is that kids are going to less prestigious colleges than their mm-hmm. parents. And I don't know about you, but I can't be at a party where someone doesn't say, I would never get into, you know, name of university, right? I would never get in.
I wouldn't get into my college.
But here's,
I would never.
But here's the thing. People say it with some pride, and that's not a good thing, because on a risk-adjusted basis,
yeah.
your kid might be a little bit less impressive than you. He or she might be more impressive than you. But most likely, they're kind of similar to you on character, academic achievement, discipline, mm-hmm. which means they're not going to have mm-hmm. the same
True.
Opportunities as you, because we have a caste system in the U.S. It's called higher education. Give me a kid's zip code, his family wealth, and most importantly, his certification or his pedigree in the form of a college degree, and I'm going to tell you how much money this kid's going to make.
It's an interesting question of how much, you know, because, you know, Silicon Valley doesn't think colleges matter at all, like a lot of people do. I'm not so sure college mattered as much for me. I have to say, I'm weirdly in a Peter Thiel camp on this kind of thing. I would have rather worked. But I do think that the achievement, you know, hamster wheel is really spinning faster than ever. And you're right. This is not – the game has gotten worse and worse for especially a certain kind of kid, for sure. But it's definitely – it makes you think about how education should be done. And why isn't Stanford open to more people online? Why isn't – why aren't these colleges everyone's dying to go to and cheating to go to have different ways to present themselves? It's an interest. It hasn't. They haven't increased applications that way.
Disney has managed to triple the number of people who can come to their parks every year. I mean, Google is now at 3 billion, mm-hmm. but Harvard has decided. Harvard said, the head of admissions last year at Harvard said, we could have doubled the incoming freshman class and not sacrificed any quality. And my viewpoint is, well,
so why not?
Yeah, with a $38 billion endowment, why not? So we should start taxing these endowments unless they grow their admissions or their seats faster than the rate of population growth. Because when you're growing your endowment faster than your public service, you're not a not-for-profit, you're a private enterprise. And one of the biggest problems is Kara, as I look at the man in the mirror, is that we academics at top universities have become drunk on exclusivity. We now believe that we're luxury brands, not public goods. We brag about the fact that we turn away 95% of our applicants, which is tantamount to a homeless shelter saying, wow, we're such an amazing shelter, we turn away 95% of the people who show up every night. This is not...
That's an interesting metaphor.
This is not a not a good thing.
No, it's not.
This exclusivity, this notion of turning away good kids such that only like freakishly good kids can now get into great schools, it's really a crisis in the U.S. because if you think about, and I'm really on my soapbox now, Kara, but if you think about the greatest the greatest things, I believe, forces of good in society, I would argue that capitalism and the U.S. middle class are right up there, turned away. Hitler arrested AIDS, and the lubricant for the middle class is education. And kids from the middle class are being squeezed out or squeezed down. And it's
they are. These games are like, were you surprised by these games that these they're sort of semi-wealthy because they're really wealthy people just buy libraries for colleges and then they go. That kind of thing. Like the Jared Kushner manner of getting into Harvard, for example.
So
but these little tricks were so weird and like complex. It was I can't even imagine. I was talking to my kid about it, and I was like, what would you do if I ever did? He's like, I wouldn't speak to you. Like, it was just, and all these kids are getting, like, thrown out, possibly getting thrown out. And it's just the whole schmagegi is, like, weird as can be, I have to say. And I felt bad enough having my kid in, like, an SAT prep course. Like, you know, I felt bad about that. I was like, well, he's getting kind of an advantage, but, you know, I can afford it kind of thing. And then they do this, and I'm like, well, I don't feel quite that bad anymore for that, but I don't feel great about it for sure.
Well, there's a lot of nuance here, right? The back door, the people who give millions of dollars, I would argue that, look, we live in a capitalist society. Spoiler alert, the kids of rich people do have an advantage, and if someone gives $10 million to a university and their son or their nephew gets in, I'm okay with that because that $10 million will actually probably increase the number of seats available to kids who might not otherwise.
Right.
I do think there is a rationale, and let's be honest, someone gives a lot of money to a university, they're going to get favorable treatment, and I'm not sure that's a bad thing. But when people, I mean, when you talk about people bribing coaches, and I mean, some of this stuff got so ugly so fast. And just a shout out, you know who has not lost the script is my alma mater, University of California. I went to UCLA undergrad, and they got ensnared in the scandal. And then Berkeley, the ranking of the 10 universities that have the most income disparity, the most people from the lowest quintile on up, seven of them are University of California campuses. Berkeley will graduate more kids from low-income households this year than the entire Ivy League combined. So there are still universities who have stayed true to their mission. But we're going to have this is going to, I think, require a lot of overdue scrutiny around, one, are we academics drunk with exclusivity? And what, two, should tenure be banished, which is nothing but social welfare for the overeducated? And three, should we be thinking about some sort of way to increase the supply of seats such that we can return to the 70s and 80s when I was applying?
It's all online. Online is how you do
100%,
it, right?
100%. Or a hybrid, right? Yeah. Half online, half offline. Yeah. But we need to bring down costs and increase supply and stop thinking of ourselves as luxury goods, but as public servants. Anyways.
Yes, luxury goods. Thank you for that rant, Scott. It was not as good as your South by Southwest
rant. There you go.
But we're going to take a quick break. There were several rants there. We're going to take a quick break now for word from our sponsors and come back with wins and fails and predictions.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. so you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
We're back to our show with Scott Galloway, who's in Aspen in some library, God knows why. We're just talking about the college admission scandal, the situation in New Zealand, and the culpability of online platforms. Now we're going to talk about wins and fails of this week. I'm going to start with a win of George Conway. And I know it's the stupidest, most ludicrous story of all time, but he's brilliant on Twitter and driving the president crazy. Now, it may be part of some elaborate reality show to take our minds off this ridiculous budget that the Trump administration put through, or maybe the Mueller report, or any number of things that are headed this way. It's a really interesting use of technology, both by President Trump against John McCain on the other side, and then whacking back at George Conway. And one of my favorite tweets, and the Twitter sphere is fantastic on this, I have to say it's been very funny, is the idea that George Conway, who is the husband of Kellyanne Conway, who works for President Trump, and John McCain have rented an Airbnb inside the head of Donald Trump, and it's all being played out on Twitter. And at the same time, the Devon Cow thing with Devin Nunes, who's suing Twitter. Nunes is obviously a fail, but the cow is a winner, has now surpassed users on Twitter. It's a silly, stupid, both silly, stupid things, but totally enjoyable.
That's hard to beat. Well, you brought up earlier, Prime Minister, I hope I don't get her name wrong, Jacinda Ardern. You know, 49 people are massacred, and then a week later they say, you know what, we're going to ban assault rifles. And they ban assault rifles, they ban high-capacity magazines, they ban the devices that turn regular rifles into assault weapons. And the opposition party that's generally a little bit more pro-gun goes, yeah, that seems reasonable, and they don't oppose it. And within seven days, they bust this move to sanity. And what's interesting is that the entire world was fixated on what happened in New Zealand. Yet we lost 54 people were murdered at a country music festival in Las Vegas. We lost 49 people in an Orlando shooting. I mean, this is happening every 6 to 12 months for us, yet we can't seem to find the same sanity that New Zealand found in 7 days. So my win is
why do you think that is? Is it, what do you think that's for, the prime minister? Okay, what do you think that's because? Americans being Americans, or the way the social media thing creates these ludicrous things that are one after the next. It's like a reality show, really.
No, I think it's because there's some very well-organized lobbies, including big tech and including the NRA, where they have taken advantage of the fact that because of Citizens United and gerrymandering and hard left and hard right districts, that effectively government has become pay for play. And well-organized, well-financed organizations can promote or delay and obfuscate sane legislation that even the majority of the U.S. is against assault weapons. But we can't seem to get this done. So I think it's money and politics that is the culprit here, not anything that's, you know, about social
not
media.
Not noisiness, because it's real noisy out there. They're all using, it's so noisy. The noisiness is really, and the ability to get sucked into this bread and circuses, you know, like these ridiculous, it feels like that with a lot of this stuff, some of which are amusing, like Devin Cow. I have to say, I totally enjoyed Devin Cow. But it's, you do get sort of dragged into the Twitter war of George Conde. I can't tell you how much time I spend watching, only because he's so funny and like he infuriates.
He is
Trump,
so your man crush.
Totally enjoyable.
He is so your man crush.
I do. I don't know what's
oh my
with
God.
He's so funny. Come on.
You really love
the
you
whole
love
narcissistic
him, huh?
personalities and his responses. Well, only because his responses are so clever. They're like, I'm like, wow, where did he, like, he's one of these, like, Ocasio-Cortez. He's good at it. And every day, you know, it's just like his little thing. It's just his little. Now he's moved into the Devin Nunes area too, which is like even better. And then every now and then he posts pictures of corgis, which is like insane. It's like really, it's wonderful and awful. So yes, I do love it. I do. I have to say,
it makes Kellyanne Conway seem more human that she decided to spend her life with this guy. No,
right?
No, you won't acknowledge that.
No,
point.
I know that, but the whole. No, I don't. I don't want to know about their relationship. I'm sure they're getting. I mean, it seems like they're getting divorced. I know she defended Trump, which was interesting, which is fascinating.
Yeah. So another winner, our man. Speaking of dreamy, Beto O'Rourke, $6.1 million dollars in the first 24 hours.
God,
isn't that crazy?
Whatever.
You're not down with Beto?
It is. He's your man. He's not my.
Oh my God, dreamy.
In any way,
dreamy. I could shower in that guy's sweat.
I'd take Biden over him. I'd take Biden over him. You see the predictions about Stacey Abrams, who I adore, being a possible vice presidential candidate for Biden. That was interesting.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. We almost never elect the third term of any one administration, and that's his strategy. I don't think it's going to work. I also think I think his age probably takes him out. We'll see.
I don't know. They're all so old. Beto. You and that Beto, man.
Oh, my God. That guy's, come on, dreamy with a capital D. 6 point. That Vanity Fair cover with him and his sad-looking dog. It's like, oh, my God, that dog is so sad.
Please.
He's going to be.
Whatever.
I
don't know. I thought Margaret Sullivan from the Washington Post had a great column, but the three Bs, all the boys.
Yeah.
It was just so typical. I'm going to move you on to something that you actually know about instead of Beto, which is the non-topic. And if you bring it up again, I'm going to have to do something about
dreamy.
It.
Dreamy.
It's this Instagram letting you buy things directly in the app now. Instagram will keep a small cut of the sale for facilitating the purchase, and it's partnering with PayPal to process the payments. What do you think of this? Is this an Amazon herder? Or, you know, Facebook's tried to get into commerce a zillion times.
Yeah, except this one's going to work. This is staggeringly powerful.
Tell me why.
Because you take someone to the bot. It's the same reason the Amazon Media Group is so powerful, because they can serve you an ad seamlessly right at the bottom of the funnel. So if you have Huggies in your cart, they can say to P&G, would you like to run an ad for Pampers as they're about to check out with Huggies? And the answer is yes, and they'll pay a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
When you're on what is effectively the Condé Nast of our generation, which is Instagram, and you see this beautiful image of a Manolo Blahnik shoe.
The Condé Nast of our generation.
You like that?
Like the old.
You like that?
I like it. I actually like it. I think it's smart. Yes, it's very smart. Like the you mean like the... I don't know, Vogue's full of ads, right? The ads are what you're looking at.
Yeah, but not only full of ads, but...
they're beautiful ads.
That's right. Condé Nast was able to bring together this unbelievable talent and make the ads, these Annie Leibovitz shots of Kate Moss in a moment in time, and you think, wow, I would really like to buy that $90 fragrance. I'm not sure why, but I'd like to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
if I could buy it right now in this irrational moment where I am moved emotionally, I would. And Instagram is giving you the ability. They're bringing together that kind of top of the funnel, beautiful moment in time, and the ability to buy it with a touch, and it's on its way.
Yeah, they're you know, Glossier has done very well on there. A lot of products have done. They've also got stuff like Opie. They've got to clean up some of the stuff they're selling. But I have to say, I have thought about buying a lot of things on Instagram and not an ability to do it. And so this is an interesting, I bet I would.
No, I literally realized I had gone to hell and that social media had taken over my brain when I actually noticed I saw an ad for a cruise and I thought, wow, a cruise doesn't sound awful. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm 105. When a cruise doesn't sound like hell, you're like, okay, I'm 105.
I hate cruises.
And then,
you know, I get sick on boats, you know?
Oh God.
I have to take
Sick watching boats. Anyways, and then where I really had gone to hell and back is all of a sudden, you know what I bought because I saw it on Instagram? I bought a pair of Allbirds. What is wrong with me? I need an intervention. I bought a pair of Allbirds.
Oh, my God.
But have you seen how incredible the ads are, but creepy in a good way? They're incredible.
No, I have never. I like the guy who found Allbirds, but no.
Oh, anyways.
It's like you and every VC in Silicon Valley love those things.
Anyways.
And do you like your Allbirds? Are they nice?
They're delicious. They're super comfy. Literally, I could wear these things everywhere. But I like to signal.
It's lovely, Scott.
I like to signal.
I bet you and Beto could bond over Allbirds. He seems like he'd wear Allbirds.
Between your lips and God's ears. Between your lips and God's ears. Bring it, Beto.
You know, I'm going to get a. Interview with him, and then I'm going to.
Oh, my
God. I'm doing Mayor Pete from Indiana soon. I would be really excited to talk to him. I'm excited. He's so smart.
Nice.
He doesn't wear Allbirds. He wears sensible shoes. Anyway, predictions, Scott.
Predictions.
Go ahead. Add whatever you predict. We've been good on predict. We've been winning on predictions. What did we predict? We had a bunch that we were right about.
Well, you predicted Amazon. You predicted Amazon was going to leave New York 24 hours before it happened.
Yes, but then there was another one we did last. Someone was pointing to it. I can't tell which one of us did it. It was, Facebook executives would leave.
Yeah, that's.
I think that was you or me. We both agreed on that one. That was good. And they did. Chris Cox left, and so did the head of whoever his name is, the guy who runs WhatsApp. That was right. That wasn't that hard to predict. Think of another prediction, Scott. I need a prediction from you, and then we have to go.
Well, my prediction is I think Beto is going to jump out ahead in the polls. I think that this is, I know, you're going to hate this. I think a white male is going to be the Democratic nominee because I think deep down everyone is freaked out. The number one criteria for the Democratic Party will be whoever can beat Trump. And I think people are freaked out that a woman spent $1 billion to lose to a criminal and they're going to go safe and they're going to nominate a white male.
That one? Okay.
I mean, a white male.
But he lost to Ted Cruz. All right. He lost to...
We'll take the other side of that,
I saw Hickenlooper on CNN last night.
What did you think of Hickenlooper? People think he's kind of a character, kind of a odd duck.
I liked him. In any other era, he could have won. In any other era, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
I was like, in any other era, he would have been a very acceptable candidate.
But
he wasn't exciting enough. He tried. He plays a guitar, apparently. That was interesting. Samantha Bee did a great rundown of the Democratic candidates, and it was very funny. And she said that the funniest thing I think that she said was that that Bernie Sanders should borrow Amy Klobuchar's comb, which I think is funny.
How's your buddy Kamala doing?
How do you feel
about Kamala's campaign?
I love her. She's great. She's my candidate.
Yeah, she's
I like
strong.
Her. If I had to pick among all of them, I think she's strong. I like a lot of them. There's several really good choices, but not the one you like. But that's okay. I'll get behind whatever one. But I would like one that could win. I would like one.
What's your prediction?
Which would be great. Oh, this Mueller report is coming, right? I don't know. I think it might be. I'm torn between it being a nothing burger and something really significant. So that's where I'm torn. I don't know. I think people will be disappointed because a lot of the stuff has been out there in a lot of these indictments. And so if it doesn't say that he did something just criminal, I think it'll be a big downer for everyone, and that Trump will take advantage of that and, you know, keep repeating his incessant lies about things.
Oh, I have a media recommendation. It just popped into my mind. I've been binge-watching something called Afterlife with Ricky Gervais. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah, I heard that's great.
It's really,
that's show, right?
Really wonderful. That guy brings together kind of dark comedy.
He's wonderful.
I mean, it is real. It's a fantastic program. Afterlife. It's really well done and really moving and funny and all that.
All right.
Good
is
stuff.
That a prediction?
No.
The prediction that I'll like it? I need a prediction.
You're going to enjoy it.
Are
you're going to enjoy it.
There in Aspen.
I'm done. It's the altitude. It's the altitude, and the edibles that are sold everywhere, like Big Macs around
all
this
right.
place.
All right. Next, we're going to talk about all these IPOs. So you better start thinking about it. Try
a
to like.
A lot of
calm
stuff coming. A lot
it.
Of stuff coming.
A lot of IPOs.
Oh, by the way, just a quick shout out.
Lyft was supposed to be $20 billion.
Now I'm finally hitting my stride as we're running over here. Levi Strauss & Company going public. The Haas family, the original gangsters of progressive values, they were giving domestic partner benefits. They were giving paternity and maternity leave before it was cool. These are people who advertise their product as being about sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but these are incredibly decent people who had kept the company private so they could take walk the walk and through a lot of incredible expense to shareholder value really implement progressive values
so
around the workforce.
They want the money.
Well, it's actually a very interesting case study because Levi Strauss and Company in the mid '90s, largest apparel company in the world, but it was a manufacturer's model, stuffing it through JCPenney's and Sears, and then running great advertisements. About the time people were spending less time watching ads, so who took over, Kara? Trivia question: who became the biggest apparel company? Yeah. The Gap, who decided that brand building was moving to the stores, and by 2002. The Gap was the most valuable apparel company in the world, and now Levi's has made a nice comeback with more control over their distribution, great product. Anyways, shout out to the Haas family and Levi Strauss & Company going public. A good brand.
All right, that's also not a prediction.
And good people.
Not a prediction.
Okay, the stock's going to pog.
No predictions.
The stock's going to pog. I gave a very, very bold prediction that the Democratic nominee is going to be a white male.
All right, okay. That's going to, we're going to have to wait for that.
We've come to grips.
Get ready on your IPOs for next week. We're talking IPOs next week.
I will study up.
And the numbers that these the 20 billion, the 120 billion, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Lyft's going to make it out first. Right. Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff, Kara.
Enjoy yourself on the slopes with your Allbirds. I hope you enjoy yourself. You're perfectly dressed for Aspen.
You know it.
You elitist. You terrible elitist.
All of those things.
I'm wearing tree torns that I resole every 6 months. Anyway, it's time to go.
Thanks, Kara.
We'll talk to you soon.
Have a good week.
Thank you. Rebecca Sinanis produces this show. Nishad Kirwa is the executive producer. Thanks also to Eric Johnson. Thanks for listening to Pivot from Vox Media. We'll be back next week with more of a breakdown of all things tech and business. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, rate, and review Pivot on Apple Podcasts. And please say what you think about Scott's new Allbirds.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
Support for this show comes from Pendo. Pendo improves the apps your customers and employees rely on. Whether you're building applications for customers or managing applications for employees, Pendo can help deliver better experiences for your users so they can get more value from your software. Pendo also provides AI-powered product analytics that fuel in-app guides to deliver personalized guidance to customers directly inside your app. Visit pendo.io/podcast to learn more about how your team can use Pendo to start building better digital experiences. There, you can also check out Pendo's lineup of free certification courses, 12 hours of in-depth training for your product management teams on topics from AI to product analytics to product-led growth. That's pendo.io/podcast to learn more.